Daniel chapter 6, I want to preach this evening on an excellent spirit. An excellent spirit is motivated, and it's what we would call a good attitude. And that's what we're going to talk about this evening. I've told people many times that, there's a lot of battles that you fight in life. Some people fight a bad heart. Other people fight cancer. Other people fight arthritis and rheumatism. Some people fight a bad relationship. Maybe the bad relationship is in their home. Maybe they're married to the bad relationship. Maybe the bad relationship is at work. But everybody has a battle somewhere. But the hardest battle of all is keeping a good spirit while you fight the battle. The hardest battle of all is not fighting the cancer for 3 years. It's keeping a good spirit while you fight the cancer for 3 years. That's the hardest battle at all. Because there is a little bit of Adam still left in us. And he does enjoy showing himself, doesn't he? And so whenever we let a bad attitude get the best of us, then what we have really done is we've let Adam out of his cage. And we really need to bring Adam in submission to the Spirit, lock him up, bind him, gag him, handcuff him, and let the Holy Spirit shine through. And if we do that, we can have a reasonably successful life, and people will see us and say, they have an excellent spirit. And so Daniel chapter 6, verse 1 through 5, and this is not the whole story, but this kind of brings you down to Daniel's spirit. It pleased Darius to set over the kingdom, that is the kingdom of the Medes and the Persians, it pleased Darius to set over the kingdom 120 princes, which should be over the whole kingdom. And over these three presidents, of whom Daniel was first, that the princes might give accounts unto them, and the king should have no damage. Then this Daniel was preferred above the presidents and princes, because an excellent spirit was in him. And the king thought to set him over the whole realm. Then the presidents and princes sought to find occasion against Daniel concerning the kingdom, but they could find none occasion nor fault, for as much as he was faithful, neither was there any error or fault found in him. Then said these men, we shall not find any occasion against this Daniel, except we find it against him concerning the law of his God. Can you imagine a guy whose spirit was so good, his attitude was so good, that 122 guys who are beneath him say, if we're gonna get him out of this presidency, if we're going to do any damage to his career, the only way we're going to find anything against him, this guy is impeccable, the only way we'll find anything against him is if we find it in relationship to his God, the law of his God. Verse 6, then these presidents and princes assembled together to the king and said thus unto him, King Darius, live forever. All the presidents of the kingdom, the governors, the princes, the counselors, the captains have consulted together to establish a royal statute and to make a firm decree that whosoever shall ask a petition of any god or man for 30 days, save of thee, O king, he shall be cast into the den of lions. Now, that sounds like a ridiculous thing to you, but remember, these people lived in the days where they believed that the kings were deity. They believed that anybody who could be the king of a kingdom had some kind of a supernatural ability about him, some kind of a divine right, that he was some kind of a god. Okay, so this is not too, in our day and age, we would look at this and say, this is preposterous. You're making the king a god. No king is a god. Well, you have to understand, in those days, they didn't believe that. They believed Caesar was a god. They believed Pharaoh was a god. In Persia, they believed their king was a god. And so for 30 days, anybody who asks anything of anyone else, what they were saying is, for 30 days, we'll be monotheistic to thee, O King Darius. Verse 8, Now, O King, establish the decree and sign the writing that it be not changed according to the law of the Medes and Persians, which altereth not. That law, once it was passed, could not be changed. Wherefore King Darius signed the writing and the decree. Verse 10, now when Daniel knew that the writing was signed, he went into his house, and his windows being opened in his chamber toward Jerusalem, He kneeled upon his knees three times a day and prayed and gave thanks before his God. And here's a key phrase, as he did aforetime. You know, a lot of people don't get serious about God until their liberties are taken away. You know, they don't pray until somebody says you can't pray anymore. They don't go to church until somebody says you can't go to church anymore. They don't do anything really. They don't want to witness until somebody says you can't pass out a tract anymore. Or you can't knock on doors anymore. Then all of a sudden, then they get real testy and want to go out and test that new law and fight against it. Well, that's kind of hypocritical. But the writer here goes out of his way to show you that Daniel was just doing what he'd always done. He didn't do anything different. Before it was against the law to pray, he prayed. Now that it is against the law to pray, he prays. And so understand that. Well, let's look at this excellent spirit. I think this excellent spirit is described early on in this passage. It said that he was preferred. Look in verse 3. Daniel was preferred above the presidents and princes. There were two other presidents and 120 princes. So if you put 122 men together in a room and Daniel's the 123rd, he's preferred above all the others. That's an interesting thing. The scripture tells us in verse 4 that they found no fault in him nor any error. The word fault means no corruption or no wrongdoing. The word error means no neglect or shirking of duties. It's kind of like the sins of commission and the sins of omission. You know, there are the thou shalt nots and there are the thou shalts. And a lot of times a person considers themselves a pretty good person because they haven't broken any of the thou shalt nots. They've not committed adultery, they've not committed theft, they've not told lies, etc. But they've left a whole lot of other things undone. Okay? And so, can I tell you, young people, that it isn't enough to just keep the rules. You can break the rules and not be a godly person by what you leave undone. There's things that we ought not to leave undone. Now, maybe your dad says, don't make your brother and sister cry. You know, don't pick on your brother or sister. Don't do that. Don't do this. And you say, I didn't do any of that. But you didn't make your bed. You didn't brush your teeth. You didn't floss. Who flosses? Do you guys floss? Huh? Sometimes? You ought to start that habit when you're young. I started about 5 years ago flossing for the wrong reasons, but now I enjoy it rather. And when I go to the dental clinic, I tell them, they say, so Mr. Dietrich, we see that you floss. You know they can tell because your gums don't bleed when they probe you. And so they say, we can tell that you floss. How often do you floss? I said, 5 to 6 days out of 7, I do not floss on the Lord's Day. Now I'm getting in my witness. Oh, they say, you know, right away they know, oh, he's a Christian. And they begin to talk a little differently and be a little different because now they know, okay, he honors the Lord's Day. And so I don't floss on the Lord's Day. It's too much like work. How often do you rinse with ACT? I rinse with ACT three days out of 5 or something like that. I actually rinse with ACT when I think of it, which isn't really that often, but at least a couple times a week. And so anyway, but those are habits that you ought not to leave undone. See, life isn't just in the what you don't do that you shouldn't do. It's in the what you don't do that you ought to do. You see, the neglect, the things that you let go. Well, I didn't read my Bible today. A lot of people don't really see that as sin, but if it's left undone, that's probably a sin. Okay? I had an opportunity to witness today, but I didn't do it. I left it undone. I should have called my mother today. The Holy Spirit told me I should have called my mother, and I didn't do it, so I left it undone. There's things that the Lord leads us to do that we leave undone. If we leave those things undone, then he that knoweth to do good and doeth it not, to him it is what? Sin. And so Daniel, these two words here, one is error. That's the things that he just neglected and overlooked. You know what it's saying? There was neither in him was there any error. He didn't leave anything undone. He was a responsible guy. If he was supposed to fill out a form, he filled it out. If he was supposed to sign papers, he signed the papers. If he was supposed to read reports, he read the reports. Whatever administrative duties he had to do, he did. Whatever he was expected to do, he did. He probably did a bunch of things he wasn't expected to do. That's why he was the ranked 123 out of 123. Or ranked one out of 123. Is because he did a bunch extra. So there was no error in him, but there was no fault. That means there was no corruption. There was no wrongdoing. You couldn't bribe Daniel. You couldn't convince him to take a bribe to do anything wrong. There was nothing. You know, they may have even hired a firm. In this day and age, politicians hire firms to investigate the other guy's private life. They want to see, has he ever had any Playboy subscriptions? Has he ever subscribed to an illegitimate magazine? Has he ever done this? Has he ever done that? Has he ever been a member of a communist organization? Has he ever done this? Has he ever had a speeding ticket? What about a parking ticket? Has he ever had a parking ticket? Whatever they can find. And on Daniel, they had checked him for parking tickets and they found none. They checked him for speeding tickets and he had a real slow camel. He obeyed the speed limits in town. They couldn't find anything on him. There was nothing for the 6 o'clock news to report. Nothing. No errors, no faults. He was preferred. He ranked one out of 123. And the Bible said he was faithful. He was faithful. Look in verse 4. Then the presidents and the princes sought to find occasion against Daniel concerning the kingdom, and they could find none occasion nor fault, for as much as he was faithful. Now, I've told you before what I think faithful means. I think faithful is when you flip a light switch and 99 out of 99 times you expect the light to come on. You know, now in Mexico, you don't always get the light to come on. In the United States, 99 out of 99 times, I turn the faucet, I expect there to be cool water. Clean water. Okay, I expect that. And if I only got clean water 2 out of 3 times, I wouldn't be happy. I'm paying a monthly water bill. I'd be calling the county water saying, what is going on? I'm only getting clean water 2 out of 3 times. 2 out of 3 times I turn the spigot, there's nothing there. Or the water's mucky looking. What's going on? Why? Because I expect the water company to be faithful. I expect the electric company to be faithful. You know, if I had a car that would only start 2 out of 3 times, I'd be getting another car. I expect when I turn the key, I expect there to be some action. I expect the thing to start. And that's what the idea is, faithful. You can count on Daniel every time. You know, he's not the guy that you expect is going to show up late and cause the meeting to be delayed. He's not the guy that's going to make another 122 guys wait because he's the last guy to get there. He'll be the first guy there, and he'll be the firstest with the mostest. And so he was a faithful guy. He had this excellent spirit. Back up to chapter 5 and verse 12. Belshazzar is seeking out help now. Belshazzar's grandfather, Nebuchadnezzar, had passed away. Belshazzar has been king for a while now. Belshazzar is having some political difficulties. And so he's seeking for some help, and he's asking about the master of magicians. And somebody says in verse 11, there's a man in thy kingdom in whom is the spirit of the holy gods. Now, that's the way people saw Daniel. In him was the spirit of the holy gods. And in the days of thy father, light and understanding and wisdom, like the wisdom of the gods, was found in him, whom the king Nebuchadnezzar thy father, the king, I say, that thy father made master of the magicians, astrologers, Chaldeans, and soothsayers. Forasmuch, why did they do this? Why did he do this? Why did Nebuchadnezzar make him the master of magicians? Why? Forasmuch as an excellent spirit and knowledge and understanding, interpreting of dreams, showing of hard sentences, and dissolving of doubts were found in the same Daniel, whom the king named Belteshazzar. Now let Daniel be called, and he will show the interpretation. This is the story where Belteshazzar has brought in all of the vessels of gold and silver that were taken from the temple of Jehovah in Jerusalem. And he's brought them into this big wild party that he's having. And he's taken wine and liquor, and he's poured wine and liquor into those vessels. And now him and his lords and ladies are having a wild orgy of a party and drinking liquor out of the vessels that were meant and dedicated for the house of God. And now a hand has appeared without an arm. And the hand has written on the wall, "Mene, mene, tekel, upharsin," which was something they didn't understand. Now Belshazzar's attention is turned to this hand on the wall and turned to this message on the wall. He doesn't know what to do. And somebody comes and tells him, "You need Daniel. That's what you need." Daniel has an excellent spirit. Daniel has knowledge. Daniel has understanding or insight. Daniel can interpret dreams. Daniel has the ability to show hard sentences, that is, to explain puzzles and riddles and so forth. And he knows how to dissolve doubts because in him is the spirit of the holy gods. Certainly he was a man to be envied. These other 122 guys, I don't know that it was his paycheck they were after, but boy, they did want the honor that was due him. They wanted the respect that was paid him. They wanted the position, the prestige, the power that he had. And you know what? None of them could hold a candle to Daniel. None of them had his kind of a faithful record. None of them had his wisdom and insight. But they all wanted the respect. They were like Mordecai, Haman. They were like Haman was a few years later. Haman wanted so bad to be the king's right-hand man that he was willing to kill a whole nation of people so he could be the king's right-hand man. And he had, you know, if he'd have gotten the throne, he would have had no idea what to do with it. Men like Haman never have any idea. They want the throne, all right. After they get it, they have no idea what to do. And I think Belshazzar was like that. Belshazzar had the throne, but he had no idea what to do with it. To him, having the throne was the privilege of throwing a big party, ordering in the vessels of gold and silver from the house of God in Jerusalem and having inviting in a bunch of people and wowing them with his power and authority in that one big room, in that one big party. He had no idea how to govern. So Daniel had this excellent spirit. He was a man to be envied. Now, what is the excellent spirit? Well, I said we'd call that an attitude, an excellent attitude. And I'm thinking of the young people here tonight. All of us, by the way, need to tune our attitude and keep it tuned, don't we? You know, my attitude is a little bit like the radio station. As I drive out of range, you know, there's a tuning dial on it. Sometimes I have to adjust the tuning dial a little bit to get it tuned in clear and crisp. My attitude's a little like that. Sometimes if I get out of range from the Lord, I get out of range a little bit, my attitude gets a little sketchy. There's a little static in it. Do you ever remember the old days? It's not so much today, but you remember those old tube TVs? How many of you remember those old tube TVs? My dad used to go to the store, and there was a tube tester at the store, and he'd pull out a bunch of tubes, and he could take them to town and test which tubes were good and which tubes were bad. And if there was a tube that was bad, he'd go to a guy up there in town across from the Ford garage, David. His name was Paul Howe. And he'd buy the tube, and sometimes he'd even go to Paul, and he'd tell Paul, "My TV's doing this. It's got zigzags going across it." And Paul would say, "Well, it's probably this tube here. Take these three tubes, and whichever one fixes the problem, come back and pay for it. Bring me the other two back." And that's the way they did business in those days. But there was a lot of interference, and sometimes a car would go by, and you know, and static would come across, and you'd have to tune it just a little bit. And sometimes when you'd change channels, you had to tune it a little bit. And our attitude's a little like that. We get out of range of the Lord, and our attitude gets a little static in it, and we need to be adjusted. So it isn't just a message for boys and girls. All of us need to keep our attitude right and keep our spirit right. But I want the young people to know this. What is an attitude? An attitude is a manner of acting, feeling, or thinking that demonstrates one's disposition, opinions, and mental state. Okay? In other words, the attitude is kind of what you reflect from your inside. What's going on inside you will show on the outside of you, and very few of you are good enough actors to cover that up. Most of us are not good enough actors. If we've got a bad attitude, it's going to show. We used to say in Bible college, when somebody would get a bad spirit, we'd say, "I smell B.A. bad attitude," you know. There used to be a commercial on, I think it was on TV, about B.O., body odor, and it was a selling deodorant bars. You know, "I smell B.O., and so they would advertise Ban or Right Guard or something like that, okay? Well, B.O. is not nearly as offensive as B.A. I'd rather smell somebody that had worked hard all day and sweat and had a little bit of body odor. I'd rather smell that than a bad spirit. And I haven't actually any scripture on this, but I believe the Lord probably would rather smell body labor than he would bad attitude too. Do you know that the word attitude isn't just used about a person's personality? The word attitude is used in painting and sculpting. I found this interesting. The word attitude is what they call the posture, action, or gesture in which a figure or statue is placed to best portray the disposition, action, or sentiments of the person represented. Okay? So an attitude is a posture. Okay, how many of you have seen that statue of the thinker? Let me make sure I get this right here. He's sitting here thinking like this. You ever seen that statue of the thinker? Okay. What do you think of now? Huh? You're thinking, "Oh dear." Can you tell by a pose? Let's supposing I'm going to pose for a sculptor to sculpt my statue. Okay. Supposing I posed like this. What would you think when you saw that statue? What am I doing? I'm meditating. I'm thinking, right? Okay. What if I'm doing this? Huh? Does that show a good attitude? Huh? If you went up to Washington, D.C. and went into Lincoln's memorial, and you know Abraham Lincoln sitting up there in a chair, what if he was doing this? Huh? That wouldn't be good, would it? That's not the attitude Mr. Lincoln had. Okay? They have him with a very serious expression on his face. You know why? Because the war with the states, between the states, had just finished. As a matter of fact, the war hardly finished and he was assassinated. He had the heaviest battle yet to go, and that was to rebuild the Union. And so the people who sculpted that statue gave him the attitude of a man who was very serious, who was very wise, but who have a very heavy burden on his shoulders. Okay? And that's an attitude. People can see from the outside. They can see from the outside what's going on in the inside. That's what an attitude is. In aeronautics, that's the science of flying stuff. In aeronautics, there is the word attitude. It is the position of an aircraft or spacecraft in relation to the horizon. Now, the horizon would be a level plane, okay? That would be the horizon. And in relation to the horizon, it's the relationship of the nose to the tail. And so every plane, as a matter of fact, has a gauge in it that is called the attitude. And it tells you what the relationship of your nose is to your tail. Supposing you fly into a huge cloud and you can't tell if you're falling out of the air or climbing. You can't tell if you're rising or if you're falling. That would be a serious problem, wouldn't you think? But you can look at your altitude or your attitude gauge. You can look at your altitude gauge and tell how high up in the air you are. But you can look at your altitude at your attitude gauge, and it'll tell you if your nose is higher than your tail. Now, why is it important for your nose to be higher than your tail if you're flying a plane? Yes. You don't want to go down and crash. You want to stay in the air. And to stay in the air, what do you have to do? You have to keep your nose higher than your tail. If your tail gets higher than your nose, sooner or later, you're going to go down. Okay? And so what do? Well, they put flaps on an airplane. And so when you want to ascend, which means to climb, you put the flaps down. And that means that your flaps on the back of your wings go down like this. And what do? They catch air. Now, when you put your flaps down, what else do you have to do? What do you think you would have to do when you put your flaps down? Is that going to take more power or less power when you put your flaps down? More power. Okay. So you're going to have to push your throttle forward because you've got to have more engine, more power in order to push more air. Well, what does the pushing of the air have to do with anything? The air is what's going to lift your plane. The air goes under the wings, and you actually ride on stuff you can't see. Do you know your attitude's a little bit like that? I mean, your attitude, you're kind of riding on stuff you can't see. Moses, what was the thing? I wrote it down here. Moses endured as seeing him who is invisible. You know, Moses saw something nobody else could see. He saw the Lord. And people with a good attitude usually see something nobody else can see. They see the Lord. When you get a bad attitude, it's usually because you're looking at the things that's causing you grief and trouble and not at the Lord. How many of you would admit every once in a while, I get a bad spirit every once in a while? Okay? Why is that? Well, it's because I'm looking at the problem and not the solution. Or maybe I'm not even looking at the problem or the solution, or maybe I'm not looking at the Lord. I'm looking at the problem and the solution both. And maybe there's the problem, and that's aggravating, and the solution is expensive, and neither one of them is any fun to look at. But when I look at the Lord, then what do I realize? I realize the Lord is the one who's above all. What did the Apostle Paul say? Rejoice in the Lord. And again, I say rejoice. Rejoice in the Lord always. And again, I say rejoice. Now, do you know where Paul was when he said that? Where was Paul when he said rejoice in the Lord always? He was writing a letter to the Philippian church. Where was he at when he wrote that letter? He was in jail. Now, supposing Paul was looking at the jailer, do you think he would have said, rejoice in the Lord always? And again, I say rejoice. If he'd have been looking at the jailer, if he'd have been thinking, that is a mean, ornery jailer, I wish I could take him outside and just beat the stuffings out of him. Would Paul have said, rejoice in the Lord always, if he'd have been thinking about that jailer, concentrating on the jailer? Or what if he'd have been looking at this dingy, dark, damp, wet hole in the ground called the Mamertine prison? What if he would have been looking at that and looking at the grates up above where people walked and threw trash in on top of him? What if he'd have been looking at his circumstances? Would he have written, rejoice in the Lord always, and again I say rejoice? Would he have written that? Probably not. Why would he write, rejoice in the Lord always, and again I say rejoice? When he's in jail, when he's in miserable circumstances, he probably doesn't have enough to eat. He's probably not warm enough. He's probably not dry. He's probably wet. He's been mistreated. Why would he say rejoice in the Lord? And again, I say rejoice. Because he's not looking at any of those things. He's seeing something nobody else can see. He's thinking about the Lord. Listen, young people, there is a place in my mind that I can go and nobody else is there but me and the Lord. Do you have a secret place? Huh? Anybody have a secret place? You don't? Man, I got to show you guys how to get a secret place. I love making paths back in the woods. Whoops. I love making paths back in the woods. And I love going back in there and making a little secret place. And then my grandkids come and they say, can we run in the woods? And I say, yeah, just leave the ticks. But they love to go run in the woods. But there's secret places back there. You say, what happens at the secret places? It's between me and the Lord. Secret places. But you know what? I don't have to go to the woods. I got a secret place in my mind. I can go there and it's just the Lord there. And it doesn't matter if I'm wet. Doesn't matter if I'm cold. Doesn't matter if I'm hungry. Doesn't matter if I've been mistreated. Doesn't matter if somebody's just told me off. None of that matters. Because I see Him who's invisible to everybody else. And I can keep a sweet spirit as long as I've got that secret place. And you know what? Nobody can take that secret place away from me. Does that make sense to you? And that's important to keep a good spirit. You've got to have that. So you put your flaps down and increase the throttle, and that lifts the nose by pushing more air under the wings. It increases the altitude. You're literally riding upon the unseen. Nobody else can see it. You know what I think about Daniel? He overcame all kinds of storms. Let's pretend like the storms and the troubles of his life were winds. Wind. You know when they talk about, and you watch a lot of those old World War II movies. I don't know if they do this with jets anymore or not. I suppose they probably still do. When it's time for the planes to take off of the carrier or to land on the carrier, do you know they always turn the nose into the wind? They have to turn the nose into the wind because the planes need the wind to stay in the air. And you know what? The wind can be that which is adverse. You can have wind come that is destructive, wind that blows over trees and wind that blows off shingles and wind that blows your hat off your head and wind that blows stuff away. And you can have destructive wind. But you know what? You can also take that same wind and use it for good. If you put your flaps down and let it go under your wings and lift you. And I think Daniel was the kind of man that whenever trouble came and whenever the adverse winds blew into his life, I think he looked them right in the face. And I think he put his flaps down and his plane began to rise. You see, Daniel got took away from his parents when he was a young man. Maybe just a boy, 605 B.C., Nebuchadnezzar came in and took away a whole bunch of the princes, that is, royal children, from the city of Jerusalem. And Daniel was taken captive in that time. He was taken away from his mother and his dad. You guys think about being taken away from your mother and dad. Being taken away from your mother and maybe your dad killed. And that's what the Babylonians did. They came and took the children away from the parents and took them back to Babylon. And you know what? Daniel had to survive. Now, he could either focus on that and become mean and have a bitter spirit, or he could say, you know what? I got to rise above this. And I believe in Jehovah. I believe in the Lord. I'm going to trust Him to help me rise above this. And he rose above it. And then he got there, and then they told him, you know what, you got to eat the king's meat and drink the king's wine. How many remember that? And Daniel said, you know what, I don't want to do that. I'm a good Jewish boy, and Jehovah has forbidden me to eat the king's meat if it's been offered to an idol and to drink the king's wine. And so he talked to Melzar, prince of eunuchs, and he worked his way around that, and he avoided defiling himself. Daniel purposed in his heart not to defile himself. That was adversity, but you know what? He rose above it. And that adversity became like a wind over which he flew. And time again, we see in Daniel's life, trouble came and he rose above it. More trouble came and he rose above it. Now, would you like to know? I should tell you this too. When he was separated from his mom and dad, carried away from his homeland into a foreign country, he was made to go to the court of a pagan king, and they did an operation on him so that he could never have a family of his own. He became known as a eunuch. He could have been bitter over that. He was surrounded by a pagan religion and a tyrant king, and he was groomed for the success of another. Lots of things to be bitter over there. If anybody ever had a right to be bitter, Daniel did. But there's no evidence in Scripture that Daniel ever became bitter. Instead, he kept this excellent spirit. Now, would you like to know in three simple steps what was the secret of Daniel's good attitude? You want to know? Let's give it to you quickly. Number one, he had a sovereign God. That means a God who is in control. Daniel chapter 1 and verse 17. Let's turn there quickly and we'll go through these steps pretty quickly. Daniel chapter 1 verse 17. As for these four children, God gave them knowledge and skill and all learning and wisdom. And Daniel had understanding in visions and dreams. That wasn't because he was smart. That was because God gave it to him. Daniel had a relationship with God and he knew that God was all powerful. Look in chapter 2 and verse 18. They would desire, verse 17, Daniel came to his friends and he began to pray with them. This is when the king had the dream that he forgot. You remember that dream that he forgot about that huge statue? And they were going to kill all of the wise men. And Daniel said, no, don't do that. Give me a chance. So he came back to Hananiah, Mishael, and Azariah, his companions, verse 18, that they would desire the mercies of the God of heaven concerning this secret, that Daniel and his fellows should not perish with the rest of the wise men of Babylon. Then was the secret revealed unto Daniel in a night vision, and Daniel blessed the God of heaven. Daniel had a sovereign God, and that's why he could keep a good spirit. He knew this is not out of control. God is in control. I don't care what the Babylonians do. God is control. I can see the Apostle Paul saying, I don't care what kind of prison they lock me in. They couldn't keep me prisoner for a minute if God didn't permit it. You see, Paul understood that God was sovereign. Daniel understood that God was sovereign. Joseph understood that God was sovereign. And because God was in control, they could trust him and they didn't have to worry or be afraid. Daniel chapter 4, verse 25. Here, Nebuchadnezzar had another dream. In this dream, he dreamed he saw a tree that was sawed off, and a band was put about it, and then he had some other parts of the dream. Well, he told the dream to Daniel, and Daniel said, King Nebuchadnezzar, you're the tree. You're going to be cut off. The next time you get proud and cocky and arrogant, God's going to cut you off. And you're going to lose your mind. You're going to think you're an animal. For 7 years, you're going to be crazy. And so 12 months later, it happened. King Nebuchadnezzar said, oh, look at great Babylon that I have built. And immediately he lost his mind. That tree was cut off. And he started growing long hair and claws. And he started looking like an animal and acting like an animal. And he would crawl on all fours. And the dew of the night would fall on him. And he was absolutely crazy. For 7 years, until he knew that God was in control. Daniel chapter 4, verse 25. And I'm looking at actually verse 32. And they shall drive thee from men, and thy dwelling shall be with the beasts of the field, and they shall make thee eat the grass of oxen, and seven times shall pass over thee until, and here's the key, until thou know that the Most High ruleth in the kingdom of men and giveth it to whomsoever he will. Why was Daniel so at peace with everything? Because he knew that God ruled in the kingdom of men. Chapter 5 and verse 23. He's talking now to Belshazzar. He says to Belshazzar, but thou hast lifted up thyself against the Lord of heaven, and they have brought thee vessels of his house before thee, and thou and thy lords and thy wives and thy concubines have drunk wine in them, and thou hast praised the gods of silver and gold and brass and iron and wood and stone, which see not nor hear nor know. And the God, get this, in whose hand thy breath is, and whose are all thy ways, hast thou not glorified? Daniel knew his God was the God, the God who was in control of the universe. Because he knew those things, because he had a sovereign God, he had respect for authority. He understood the art of appeal. He was humble in success. Even when he was successful, he was never arrogant about it. and he was faithful in service. So why did Daniel have this excellent spirit? Because he knew God. He knew a sovereign God. He knew the God who was in control. Here's the second reason he had a sweet spirit, because he had a secret place of prayer. In chapter 2 and verse 17, we just read this for you, how he came to Hananiah and Azariah and Mishael and said to them, okay, guys, quick, we got to have a prayer meeting. The king is going to kill all the magicians tomorrow unless he gets the interpretation of this dream. And we've got to go to prayer tonight, and we've got to pray that God will give us the interpretation of the dream. And then he said, it's even worse than that. We got to pray that God will give us a dream, because the king can't remember the dream. I mean, how do you like them apples? And so Daniel that night prayed. He had this vision. He had the dream. He had the interpretation of the dream. But he had this place of prayer. And you know what? Kings have come and gone. Now in chapter 6, where we're at tonight, kings have come and gone. In chapter 6, Daniel's probably 90 years old. In chapter 1, he was probably 20 years old. So 70 years have come and gone. According to arithmetic, the Jews with Zerubbabel have probably already gone back to Jerusalem to rebuild Zerubbabel's temple. Daniel's an aged man. For 70 years, he's had a place of prayer. And look again at this, if you would, in verse 10 of chapter 6. Now when Daniel knew that the writing was signed, he went into his house, and his windows being opened in his chamber toward Jerusalem, he kneeled upon his knees 3 times a day and prayed and gave thanks before God as he did aforetime. Now, boys and girls, when do you think he started doing that? Think he started doing that the week before? No. You think he did it when Belshazzar was king and the handwriting was on the wall? Do you think that's when he started it? No, you think he did it before then. Do you think he did it when Nebuchadnezzar was still living? How many of you think he did it before he ever left Jerusalem as a boy that was snatched away from his parents? I think he did that all his life. That was the one given that every day Daniel talked with God. He knew God was in control. He was all sovereign. Not only did he know about God that he was sovereign, but in prayer he knew God. It's one thing to know about God. It's something else to know God personally. And here's the third thing. He had a sovereign God, he had a secret place of prayer, and he had a certain success. Now, what do I mean by that? Well, in chapter 1, he was kind of an apprentice governor. He was just learning the ropes, okay? He had just come to Babylon from Israel. He was still in training, really. And so he was kind of learning the ropes. But in chapter 2, he became the master wise man. And soon he rose all the way to the top rank in the government of Nebuchadnezzar. I mean, he may have been chief of staff, but he was surely the head of the magicians. And then Nebuchadnezzar dies, and a few years later, his son or his grandson, we're not sure which, Belshazzar became king, and he was an absolute jerk. And during Belshazzar's reign, Daniel was forgot about. Belshazzar paid no attention to him. He was back in some retirement village somewhere and had been absolutely forgotten about. Did he get bitter? No. When they called on him, did he come? You know, I could see Daniel saying to Belshazzar, look, when you became king, you wanted nothing to do with me. Now you got an armless hand in your palace that's writing on the wall and doing graffiti on the wall. Now you want me to come read the mystery for you? Well, you can just take a hike, king. You didn't want me when you became king, so you can live without me now. I could see him being that way, but he wasn't that way. He said, my king calls, I will go. And he went. And he read the message, and he gave the king the message, and he treated the king with respect, though he told him God is going to judge you. That's what the message is all about. But can you understand? He came from nothing, became the master of magicians, and then he's retired, like he's not important anymore. And then all of a sudden, here Belshazzar says to him, if you read this, I'll make you the third highest ruler in the kingdom. Daniel said, keep your money, keep your clothes, and keep your position. I don't want anything you have. And so he goes back into retirement. And then Darius the Mede takes over the city. And what does Darius the Mede do? He brings Daniel out of retirement. He says, I'm going to make 120 princes with three presidents over them. And Daniel's going to be president number one. And so now all of a sudden, Daniel's risen back to prominence. Only to find out that they pass a law that sends him to the lion's den the next day. Boy, what a roller coaster life. He's been up and down, up and down, up and down. He's been lied to. He's been betrayed. He's been used. And he's still got a sweet spirit. He's still got a good spirit. Why? Because Daniel's view of success does not depend on how much money he makes. It doesn't depend on the position that he holds in the government. It didn't matter to Daniel whether he was the number one president or the number three president or president at all. It didn't matter to Daniel if he had fancy robes to wear or just cotton garments. It didn't matter how much money he made. Why? Because the one thing that mattered in Daniel's life was pleasing the Lord and doing his will. From the very beginning, what was the thing Daniel was concerned about when he was being groomed to lead in the king's palace? What was he concerned about? You've asked me to eat this meat and drink this wine. If I do, it'll defile me before my God. He was concerned about doing God's will. And I submit to you, that's all he was ever really concerned about. Whether he was at the top of the cycle or at the bottom of the cycle, whether he was in prominence or whether he was in retirement and hidden away, it didn't matter to him. All that mattered was that I'm pleasing the Lord. And can I tell you, young people, it won't matter in this life if you get the big job or not, if you please the Lord. It won't matter if you live in a big city or a little countryside village, if you please the Lord. It won't matter if you have a big income or a little income, if you please the Lord. The thing that will add consistency to your life is doing the will of God. Please the Lord. So the reason Daniel had this good spirit was because he had a sovereign God who was in control. He had a secret place of prayer, and he had a certain success. And because of that, he had an excellent spirit. And you know what? The king loved him. Every king but Belshazzar loved him, because he had an excellent spirit. And you can have an excellent spirit too if you remember the things that Daniel did. Would you bow your heads with me, please, for prayer?